It's the Barry Pod on 99.3 thevine.com.
This is the Barry Pod, recorded on January 9th, 2024. And this time in the pod with me is Liz Alessio. Hello.
Hello, Barry. Thanks. Good morning.
Thanks for being in the pod.
Thanks for asking me back.
So the topic, of course, is your decision to become a candidate for supervisor in Napa County. You recently, relatively recently, reelected for another city council term.
Yes, in 2022.
Ready to leave that behind and move on to the next thing. What's motivated that decision?
Well, you know, we're just on live, and I'll kind of share what I shared on the radio. It's really been about 2 years that different folks have asked me to consider running for supervisor. To be frank, I love city council. I love being a part of the city. It's a great organization. We have a great mayor. All our council members, you know, really are fully devoted to the city. And we work really good as a team in terms of informing each other and being accessible and engaged with the community and listening. So making this decision to depart from the city was a big decision for me. But just as when I ran for city council, it was based on an identified need in terms of at that time where the city didn't have or include in the conversation how what's called health and all policies or public health impacts the community that lives within the city and how that's a very important element and ingredient in terms of making decisions on policy, planning, zoning for the folks in the city. And that includes housing and the unhoused and access to parks and multimode transportation, such as walking and cycling and those healthy aspects where stores are located, food deserts, you know. So it's how you design the city. And so, you know, moving here to, you know, fast forward and after a couple of years of people just, you know, always saying, Lizzie always brings such a public health holistic approach, and me also experiencing and seeing this struggle to navigate for folks to be able to navigate access to mental health services and behavioral services, substance abuse disorder services, and the continued efforts on the in-house. I would say the health and human services aspect is my driving force, is really here to help the people who live in our communities within the city of Napa, but also up Valley and into American Canyon. You know, a very large part of the budget for Napa County is health and human services, yet it really has very little time and discussion on the dais. And I can tell you, as somebody who's been working in this field since 2008, when I worked for Queen of the Valley in community outreach and working with public health in the nonprofit sector and working on community health needs assessments and strategic planning and annual reports, that it's not getting better. We're seeing the numbers increase nationwide in our state. We're not unique. But I had also, as fate had it, I had family and friends who have gone to the point of taking their lives. I have a family member who struggled severely. Still, it's a chronic issue with mental health. Substance abuse disorder, was unhoused for a long time, and trying to help her through the process gave me a front line view and experience that I saw through her, and that I was also as a family member, that was very, very challenging. And I saw the struggles and the of what the frontline staff are also working, people that were out there working with the homeless, the unhoused, the people in these different departments, very dedicated staff, but the system just isn't. It can be improved, and that's what I'm hoping to do.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any specific plans or policy ideas to address these concerns?
Well, the first thing I'd like to do is I think we need to listen to the clients. And we need to listen to their support system if they have a support system. We need to listen to the frontline staff and, you know, get some chart paper out or however you want to do it and start chiseling away at every single barrier and obstacle. Some of these are efficiencies in the fact that we have a very traditional way of being hyper-focused on just what our job is. And I get that. But to look how each is impacting the other and to create more ease and efficiency and really create more access for folks. There's, you know, some of it is outside the realm of what the county can do. And I recognize that. So what can we do on a state level to, you know, legislation? So there's communication, there's a real breakdown in communication. People that are out there trying to help the unhoused actually don't know a lot about the person that they're helping. And on the good side, I understand in terms of the privacy, but, you know, wall me in, wall me out, wall me out, wall me in. You know, those create walls and barriers for people to be able to give the proper support and help. And what's happening is that person or their family member has to repeat all the traumas of their life over and over and over again. And that is re-traumatizing. We've seen this. This is why the Monarch Justice Center has opened, because it's a one-stop, I don't say shop, center that really creates on a holistic level. So when a victim of a violent crime, domestic violence, rape, molestation, they will go in, they'll be interviewed one time, and everybody else has access to that information, and they work as one unit to help that victim through the process. And it's not just the trauma of what they received, but it's all the ripple effects it has. You know, they might lose their housing, they lose their job, they have mental, now they have even, you know, mental illness. It's gonna continue to overwhelm them, especially over time as they try to process, if they can process. So, you know, we really need to be working on that kind of model instead of just, you know, the more traditional. And I just think I know there's opportunity to improve. For instance, we don't have access to psychiatric care. It takes, somebody's in a psychiatric crisis, they can go to the crisis center, thank goodness. It's often full, to be frank. But folks who are on the street or folks who are in the crisis and then are out that need access to the Navajo County Mental Health, they have to wait. They have to go through an interview process. The interview process, and it has to be assessed. This is taking weeks into a month or plus. They then get a referral to a psychiatrist. That takes a week to 2 weeks. Right? You hear what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And then they finally get that. And then what happens is they don't have access to the medication. They have to wait another day because we don't have a 24/7 psychiatric medication access here. They have to get the medication from Solano County. So I'm not trying to be critical, I'm being honest, but there's so many things that's why we need to listen to the folks who are trying to access these services. They don't want to. By the time they do it, that moment it's, you know, you want to be able to reach and help people when they're ready to be reached. Not when they're off and gone again.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So that timing is really important for them and their family, and again, for the people who are out there on the front lines working so hard to try to help.
I read a study recently, saw some reports on a study about homelessness specifically, that when you look at the country overall, the cities that have the most profound homelessness problems all have one thing in common, and that is that their cost of housing is very high.
Yes.
If you go to a place like Detroit, Michigan, which we mostly, when you say Detroit, Michigan, you think about a destroyed city, empty blocks and blocks of nothingness, crime, extremely disadvantaged, poor people, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's our image of that city. And yet, their homelessness problem is a fraction of what we have here in the Bay Area because it's cheap to buy a house or rent an apartment in Detroit. And there's lots of cities like that across the country, right?
Yeah.
So
Baltimore is a good example of that.
Baltimore, there you go. Mm-hmm. Cincinnati is a very cheap place to live,
too.
Right?
Yeah.
So you start to point at, okay, look at this. This is, you know, a correlation, and it maybe is the causation of this problem.
Yeah.
How do we address that in a place where historically housing prices are so high and there's constant upward pressure? That's really, to me, it seems like that's got to be the biggest challenge in homelessness.
It's a great challenge. I would say it is, it's one of those, you know, if you're under economic stress, you know, having financial means is like having oxygen. When it's restricted, it's hard to breathe and it's hard to function. And if that happens over a long time, it becomes this chronic stress, and then people are trying to mitigate how they get through that stress, right? And it just becomes a bigger and bigger problem. And so I absolutely agree. It's, you know, it is, I would, it's hard for me to see, to be frank, I mean, all housing is needed, and people would argue that we need continue to build single family homes and keep those market rate. I mean, I have to say, we have such a little resource of land available to preserve our ag preserve and our open space that we need to really say, I mean, I want every parcel that's available to be a multifamily unit or to be small units. As you know, my husband is a general contractor, and so he'll buy homes of different sizes that are really have kind of lost life. They're not really very habitable. And he gets in there, and he is able to do this with small homes. You know, we're talking 1,000 feet, 1,100 feet, or smaller. And I just think they're, and still make a great profit for him, right? I just think that we need to build, and we need to design our city and make housing available and accessible on the financial aspect. Really proud that seeing all the, it's a new landscape for us, but we're seeing a lot of apartment buildings. We're hearing projects where people are going to be building commercial on the main ground level, and then apartments on the second or third. And then they may throw like a level of hotel in, or, you know, there's all these discussions, but it's kind of going back into the old days, if you think about it, where the store was on the first floor, the salon was on the first floor, and folks lived upstairs, right? So it's kind of going back to those prior days, but you're absolutely right. We really need to be designing our city and building housing for what we really need, and that's housing that's affordable.
Let's switch gears here for a minute. Without discounting or downgrading the priorities you just talked about, healthcare and human health and human services and homelessness, those are all obviously very high priority items.
Yeah.
All the same, what really gets people's motors running around Napa Valley...
Is this a pun?
No. I wish I'd thought of that. But it is land use issues.
Yeah.
And the case in point of that currently is the La Colleen decision by the current Board of Supervisors that was a real eye-opener for a lot of people, and a feeling among some that things have changed in Napa. There's something different afoot here. First of all, did you agree with the decision by the current board to reject that vineyard proposal?
I did. And, you know, it's tough. I've been a business owner in past. And, you know, this applicant, and I'm really, hopefully as a supervisor in the future, one of my priorities when I get started is really to talk with county staff to get a better understanding why that took 9 years and I think like $1 million for an applicant to go through that process. As somebody who really supports business and a previous business owner, I understand the sacrifice, the investment, the anxiety that goes into when somebody opens a business or wants to do something with vision and fill their own dreams. So I don't say it lightly. You know, I think that's what's happened in the landscape is really it's climate change and the impacts of climate change. It's the flooding, it's the torrential rains, it's the fires. Those because of climate change, and we're seeing it now, since 2017 was a big eye opener, right? That was horrific. And you know, Napa has been a place where Napa's flooded. Thank God we have the flood project, but we are seeing rain come down and hit our hills with sediment and debris and everything that washes down into our municipal waters, Conn Creek, Lake Hennessy, like we've never seen. We have to, you know, it's one of those things, as we know better, we need to do better. When this applicant first started, you know, 9 or 10 years ago, when that started, these things weren't occurring. This wasn't part of our conscious or our, you know, looking at how we're going to plan. The county general plan, it has contradictions with their conservation policy. Supervisor Cottrell laid out a long list of current county conservation policy that supported the discretion upon the Board of Supervisors to put caution to, you know, to support the appeal on it. I don't like it. I feel like it's a lose-lose for everybody, and I'm always searching for the win-win. I want to learn more about that. If I was wrong to support the appeal on that based on the new science, based on the experts that came to testify, there were almost 40 people that testified, and not just the neighbors that were concerned about Linda Falls, which is really a treasure of ours, and how would it impact Linda Falls and the habitat corridors and the species that are on the endangered list, but also looking at, you know, the you know, how that runoff, it's 200 feet, a steep slope that's going to go right into Conn Creek and Conn Creek right into Lake Hennessy. We just have to think about these things differently with the information that we know and with the extreme weather events that we have now and we're going to continue to see. So it's hard, but I'm all in to listen to everybody. And, you know, when I make a mistake, I'm like, okay, I am sorry I made a mistake. I understand more now. So It was a lose-lose for everybody. I want to support, you know, folks who want to fulfill their dreams, business owners. I get it. I totally want that. I also want to support, you know, our watersheds, the health of our groundwater. You know, wells are being dug deeper. Wells are having to go deeper and deeper because of the groundwater issues that everybody's experiencing. So it's very complex. It's not easy. And I'm going to continue to listen and learn. You know, running being a candidate, it's a very humbling experience. You learn a lot. You're asked tough questions. And I think what's most important and what's most exciting for me is meeting new people, listening, learning, and being able to make more comprehensive decision making. But I do think that was the right thing to do at that for this specific project.
Now, clearly, I'm not a lawyer, but it would seem to me that if you're an applicant and you follow all the rules and you go through all the procedures for 9 years, and then all of a sudden you get turned down, even though you've checked all the boxes, you are a prime candidate to sue. And it would seem like there's probably other projects in the pipeline that are similar to this, that if they end up the same way, the county could be looking at a lot of legal exposure. I would guess that's a conversation that's taking place behind closed doors. True?
I'm not behind those closed doors. I don't know. I do think it puts at least I hope it does, that it puts more precedent on getting the general plan started. And I think that, you know, again, looking at this as a case study, being really frank, you know, about what we did right, what we did wrong. Again, I think that the conservation policies that are just as valid as a general plan and the land use policies, there's a contradiction. You know, out there when it comes to a general plan, folks are saying, and this is the world I came from, is that your plan is 3 to 5 years because things are rapidly changing. A 20-year general plan is just not realistic. Mm-hmm. We need to be updating that general plan at least every 5 years. If we stay on top of it, it doesn't have to be as in-depth. It doesn't have to be so vast and take so long and be so expensive. So I would hope that we would start looking at these general plans every 5 years. Yes, we need to continue to update. As we know more, we need to do better, you know, and all those things. If we make mistakes, we need to look at where we did. I do think the county will be okay because of those conservation policies. They went to policy when the board made this decision. And there's conflict in there. And frankly, that in itself is a really big problem. Mm-hmm. And you know, consistency, reliability, for folks to be able to depend in terms of being able to have, you know, business and you know, I'm a, I'm, I love our wine valley, our industry. We are blessed. We could have been a lot of different things. I mean, think about those visionaries back in the 70s when they put in, you know, the ag preserve, how much resistance that they received, right? But they were, they had this foresight and this vision, and they were looking outside of this valley of what could have potentially happened in Napa County. And so we really need to continue to have that courage and that conviction and continue to kind of model that and make those hard decisions that may be confusing and frustrating right now, but in the future we'll be thankful for.
So when you got into the race, when you announced that you were going to run, Ryan Gregory, the incumbent, was still planning to run.
Yeah.
Since that time, he's decided not to for various reasons, which we talked about in the last episode of the Berry Pod, actually. So for reference, listeners can go back and listen to that. Did you feel that because you got into the race when Ryan Gregory was still in it, did you feel like he had done things poorly? Were there errors of judgment on his part that you thought you could do a better job?
Oh, I'm not here to criticize the hard work and, you know, and all the good work that Supervisor Gregory brought to the county and to the board and his district and specifically. You know, he worked really hard with you know, fire-wise in terms of fire mitigation and, you know, and that's, I have great gratitude with that. You know, just as when I ran for city council, you know, I did it because I felt called, because I saw a need. As I shared, it's really more on the health and human services area. It's the people who live in these communities who are suffering. That's why I'm running. So it's nothing to do regarding him. It's just, I just feel called to run. And frankly, like I said before, it's a big decision. It's a big sacrifice, and it's a lot. It's a huge honor to have the opportunity. I'm just a Napa gal. I'm a Napa gal that, you know, raised three kids here. My family's been here for generations. My dad was a police officer. My mother was a banker. You know, we're very middle income, you know, family. I had my own chickens. My dad was a sportsman. So we ate what he hunted. I mean, we had gardens in our yard. I mean, we just lived a very simple life. And as, you know, my grandparents did, and my family has been here since 1870. You know, this is pretty amazing. You know, it's to think, and this is not my why, but this is just a consequence. This is how life works in these full circle unanticipated ways, is that my great-great-grandfather was a county supervisor in District 2 120 years ago, from 1901 to 1904. That boggles my mind. Now, that's not my why at all. It's just kind of like, that's amazing. But it also is, in some ways, evidence of why I grew up wanting to serve. My parents served on local boards and committees. Their parents did too. They're always civically engaged and engaged in community where the community needs, not in the necessarily in a lot of small nonprofits, like, you know, with Operation with Love from Home. Mm-hmm. You know, we just had our 17th care package assembly. That's not a big, splashy, you know, we send care packages year round to people who don't even know the hard work of volunteers are doing. And that's the kind of thing that my parents modeled and their parents modeled. So it's those reasons. I think it's just kind of like in my DNA, in my heart, to kind of follow where the needs are and wanting to serve in that area.
For the record, what was the name of that great-grandfather supervisor?
Yes, Matthias Vandeleur.
Vandeleur.
Vandeleur. Vandeleur. My birth name is Elizabeth Vandeleur Hart, H-A-R-T.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
French origin?
You know,
Belgian?
Well, he was an Irish immigrant. And so, you know, if you look at, you know, I love the ancestry and local history and family history. So they were in Ireland, and it looks like in the England area in the 1600s, but mainly Ireland. But yeah, I'm learning more and more about the family history. And I did the whole, like, you know,
23andMe and all that.
Yeah, well, I did Ancestry.com. Yeah. But yeah, it's really interesting. But yeah, I think that if you go further back, I think that it's like in terms of like I've got like a really small percentage of Norwegian, right. You know.
Yep. Me too. Maybe we're related.
Maybe we are.
Endorsements.
Yeah.
Do you have endorsements for your candidacy that you're proud to talk about?
You know, I think that, you know, I want to say that I chair the Napa Valley Transportation Authority and I chair the Climate Action Committee. And I've been on the Napa Solano Area Agency on Aging Commission and on other boards and committees, both through appointments through the city of Napa and then just on my own that reach countywide. And so I tell you, even before Supervisor Gregory decided not to run for another term, every mayor in this county endorsed me. And I'm really proud of that. Because I think that the opportunity that I see is that we can work closer with each jurisdiction and the county, you know, and the mayors felt that, and I felt that again, just as, you know, it's, you know, this is not casting blame, but I just see there's opportunity to have more transparency, to have more collaboration, to bring people to the table. As we come to these issues together, because they're all our issues, and to solve them, we need to work together. And, you know, from the beginning, instead of being kind of saying, okay, this is the direction we're going to, here's your marching orders, right? Mm-hmm. And that's kind of tough. And I think that that is also, what that does is it kind of erodes this relationship that is about trust and respect. When you don't include, you know, the mayors and the councils or the city managers when it comes to these holistic, you know, universal issues that we have in the county and other jurisdictions have too, you know, how can we come, you know, how do we think about building more housing, smaller units countywide within our jurisdictions so we can preserve our ag preserve as long as possible? This is something I'm very committed to doing. How do we come together during crisis, during a pandemic, during a fire, during, you know, torrential storms, you know, when this is, you know, it's there, as I say, and I love the saying, Governor Newsom said the saying is that there's no such thing as a leak on your side of the boat. That is so true in this county. And so we really need to include the jurisdictions in all these early conversations. So that endorsement was meant a lot to me. Our mayor, Scott Sedgley, of course, he was the first person I talked to about this decision. I went to people, I mean, people came to me, but I also went to other people and I asked, you know, I feel called to do this, but I was kind of pushing it back and saying, no, I'm not going to do it now. This is not the time. And then finally I'm like, okay, I'm going to go ahead and move forward. This is the right time for me to do this. And if I don't, I'll be betraying my own conscience.
On the other side of endorsements, yeah. There are two other races, of course. And are you endorsing anyone in the other supervisor races?
I am early on, Supervisor Ramos. We worked very closely together. I've seen her in action. She works extremely hard. She's completely dedicated. And so, yeah, I said, absolutely. Your leadership, your commitment is evident, and be honored to endorse you. When Supervisor Gallagher ran, you know, I supported Supervisor Gallagher, and she was really instrumental in me even getting into this public sector and being on council. And again, she comes from that world that brings something new and different, and she's a very dedicated, hard worker. And so in terms of the other races, I'm going to let the voters decide those. The good news is, with the District 4, you've got two candidates who are very different but very committed. In District 5, you know, for me, I just see that Belly is just the right person, and she's still on fire, and she's kind of getting into her prime. I think she's just getting better, as we all do with time, in terms of being in a position for a while. Going back to the other endorsements, for me, truly honored Congressman Thompson endorsed me, Senator Dodd, Cecilia Aguiar-Curry, she selected me as her Woman of the Year for State Assembly in 2017 to have her continued support, and many others. They're listed on my website, but I'm really honored. I'm humbled, but not just their endorsement, just, you know, my neighbor, my mother, you know, it's like, I want everybody, you know, and those votes are basically, at the end of the day, what happens in this primary election, each vote is an endorsement of trust and saying, okay, we're going to give you a chance. We trust you with this.
And just a little basics for folks listening. We're talking about Supervisor Ramos, the incumbent, and
yes.
The opposition is Mariam Abudamus in District 5. In District 4, it's Amber Manfrey and Peter Mott.
Yeah.
And you have an opponent as well, I believe, that we won't discuss right at this moment.
Okay.
All of those other people that I just mentioned will get a shot here on the Barry Pod to tell their story like this, which is something we always try to do. And eventually we get to Election Day. And the other point that I'm emphasizing every chance I get on the air and on the pod here is it's a very short period of time before this election takes place. It's the beginning of March, not June like it used to be.
Yeah.
When there are only two supervisor candidates, it means it's over in March. Mail-in voting is going to start in about a month from now.
Yeah, people have ballots in their hands in a month. The ballots are approximately going to be mailed on the 5th of February.
Yeah.
It's mind-boggling.
Yeah, so right now is sort of the time to talk and have events involving the candidates, candidate forums, and these kind of radio shows and podcasts and stuff to get acquainted and understand what the issues are. So thanks for being here today for this. And for folks listening, all the other folks eventually we'll get to.
Thank you.
Liz Alessio, candidate for supervisor in District 2 in Napa County. This has been the Barry Pod, recorded on the 9th of January, 2024.
You're listening to The Barry Pod, tastings from Wine Country Live in the morning.
On 99.3, thevine.com.